Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
You are a human animal. You are a very special breed. For you are the only animal who can think, who can reason, who can read.
From KCRW Santa Monica, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and this is Bookworm. Today, I'm pleased and honored to have as my guest Adaf Souif. We are taping in Santa Fe, in the library at the Lannan Foundation. Adaf Souif, a Lannan Award winner, has given a reading last night, and we are talking about her several novels, most recently, The Map of Love, available from Vintage, and In the Eye of the Sun, also available from Vintage. Adaf Souif was born in Cairo, and she lives now in London. I wanted to begin, because this is the inevitable beginning with you, in the question of how it comes to be that you write in English rather than your native Arabic.
Hi, Michael. It's good to be here.
It's nice to see you.
I think with the question of the language I write in, I was the language I first read in was English, so it was an accident. We happened to be in England from when I was 4 till I was 7. My mom was studying, and my father and I went with her, and. In fact, I lost my Arabic and went to school in England and learned to read at the age of 5, and so read English to begin with. And when we went home to Cairo, I relearned Arabic and, in fact, went to an Arabic school and so on. But I was already hooked on the material that you could read in English. And with my mother taught English literature at Cairo University, and so I grew up surrounded by her library. And this was a girl growing up in Cairo in the 60s. My brother and my sister were a lot younger than me, and so really the most adventurous, permissible thing to me was reading. And I ended up, I think, reading practically all of her library. And then joined the English department, Cairo University. And so I think that what happened along the way was that English became the language of literature for me. And while I was perfectly happy and comfortable living in Arabic, when I came to write, I found I could only write in English.
Your recent novel, The Map of Love, covers 100 years of history, largely Egyptian history. And it follows a parallel track. Two romances are occurring simultaneously, one beginning at the beginning of the century and one at the end. The Cairo we see with Anna Winterbourne is a very sophisticated city, grows more so, and yet when our narrator comes back to it after a London marriage, it is a different place. What has happened?
Well, as my narrator puts it, the city has changed. Now, I think all places do change, but some more than others. And Cairo is under tremendous pressure. When I was growing up in the 60s, I think that it was a city of about 6 million people. It's now a city of 18 million without really a corresponding growth in infrastructure, facilities, and so on. This is because of movement of people after the 67 war, for example, when all the canal areas, people had to move out. And emigrated to Cairo because of things to do with agricultural policies, where people are more and more unable to make a living off the land, and so they drift to Cairo, and so on. We also have a great many refugees from different parts of Africa. I think we have 1 million Sudanese, for example. So there's there's a great pressure on the city, and the government's response is always very hand-to-mouth, very sort of solving the problem that comes up today, rather than having a strategic plan which takes account of many things, not least of which is the amazing history, our architectural history of a city that's been around for 1,000 years.
Now, my guest, Adaf Souif, has been referred to as Egypt's George Eliot, and I'm always puzzled, in a sense, by crossover, you know, references like that. But it does strike me as true that there is an interest in writing a historical, political, factual novel, that these are books that are very interested in a weighted and subtle way in presenting accuracies of many sorts of different parts of populations, of foreigners, of men and women, and in finding a way to talk about reality as opposed to oppositional or polarized melodrama. And it seems that if anything at this time, this is very hard for a novelist to do. And I wondered if you would talk to me about this kind of realism.
Well, obviously, a tremendous honor to be mentioned in the same breath as George Eliot. And, you know, I don't believe it for a minute, but it's good to have it said. And I think partly it sort of came up because I've always said that George Eliot is my, probably if I had to settle for one novelist as my absolute favorite, it would be her. I think that the kind of novels that I have enjoyed reading and that I have got the most out of are novels which you can broadly call realistic, in the sense that they create a world that the reader can enter and that can seem very, very real, and the reader can be part of it for the duration of the novel, and can, should I hope, get to feel that these characters are people that the reader knows and cares about and feels very, very close to. That's definitely something George Eliot does, and that's something that, I mean, I feel that I grew up accompanied by characters from various novels who were as real to me as, you know, my family and friends, and whom, in a sense, I sort of knew better, because, of course, when you read about a character in a novel, you have access to their most private thoughts and feelings in a way that it, you know, if you ever get to that point with another live human being, it's sort of a pretty long process. Also, with George Eliot, you have a novel that is interested in being a novel and in this whole character issue. And then when you sit back and think about it, you realize that it is political, that it does not pretend that you can escape from politics in your daily life.
The first of your two novels appeared 10 years after your first book of short stories. The novel is In the Eye of the Sun, and it's remarkable in that, among other things, it's nearly 800 pages long.
Yeah.
It's a...
Which actually is the length of Middlemarch. It's 330,000 words, which is what Middlemarch was.
And it is a feminist novel in many ways, in that it is a Bildungsroman about a particular woman growing up in her culture, Egypt, London, England. I wanted to ask, because you have said that the attitude toward the constraints placed upon Egyptian women is misrepresentative. And this novel goes quite some distance, nearly 800 pages of distance, to create accuracies. What were the ideas and impressions you were trying to combat?
I actually don't know that in that particular novel I was working against any ideas. I think I was interested in charting the emotional mental development of my central character, Essie Al-Ulama. And in doing that, I probably did go against certain stereotypes. And I think I only really thought of that consciously when the book came out and when I started getting readers' responses. And I remember getting a letter from a French woman, for example, saying that that she had never thought that she could identify with an Egyptian character, and that she had been sort of really quite taken aback to find that she shared such a lot of feelings and ambitions and ways of thinking with Asya al-Ulama, who is essentially an Egyptian character. And this theme kept really coming back from responses to the novel. So I'd get Egyptian and Arab women saying, you might have been writing my story, and I'd get responses from Western people saying, my God, I identified with this woman so much. And that really, well, it was tremendously encouraging for me. And it said that there was a seam here of common human experience that was a rich seam for a novelist to work on, and also was in a sense a more positive and hopeful angle to work from than the more generally used one, which sort of goes on about differences rather than similarities.
Well, it is fascinating, because I do think that part of what you are working against in the realist novel, but in particular in your realist novels, are the conventions that exist in literature. In The Map of Love, we're dealing with two romances. There is going to be, in this book, the reader will find an abduction, a journey across the desert at night, a romantic scene, disguises, men to women, no, and women to men, mostly. And what we're implicitly being told is, A, this abduction is true, and it has never been written down. It's only if you examine the private journals of the characters of several ethnicities that you'll begin to put the story together of what really happened. So one, we're being told that romantic elements of fantastical tales are in fact often private. They are not public knowledge. Why? Because if it had been known that this woman had been abducted, there would have been an international incident, and she is as sensitive to that as are her abductors. And so it enters that private realm in which suddenly the question of romance becomes a different question. What is reality? How do people deal with a world inimical to the travel of a stranger within a culture that is resistant to the stranger? And what we're finding again and again is that we are constantly interpreting the world through the eyes and imagination of the other. And these books do much to return to proper consciousness what is actually happening, as opposed to interprojection.
Well, I think one sentence that you said there, I mean, I think it's very interesting, yes, about the private-public aspects of the abduction and so on. But one thing you said was about strangers moving around in a culture that is inimical to strangers moving around in it. And that was really one of the things that I wanted to explore. To what degree is a particular culture inimical to strangers moving around in it? Now, I have lived in England for my sins for about 20 years. And that is not a culture that is particularly hospitable to strangers moving around in it. We are encouraged to believe, I think, in, I think, by the image that's presented, let's say, of the Arab world or the Muslim world, that it is closed, that it is hostile, that it's difficult for people to from the West, let's say, just to use sort of broad brushstrokes here, to move around in it. My experience has been actually exactly the opposite. And that's one of the things that that the Map of Love tries to explore. And in fact, at the reading that that I just did in Santa Fe, somebody came up to me after the reading, a wonderful sort of elderly man, and he gave me an envelope. And he said he wanted me to see what he had written in it. And I went back to the hotel late at night, and I read what he'd written. And he had spent, during the last year, he had spent about 9 months, I imagine, in Saudi Arabia as part of, as leader, I guess, of a group of artists who wanted to work with artists in Saudi Arabia, in Abha, I think, in desert areas, and sort of have workshops and so on. And that's what they did for 9 months. And he had written an account of that experience, which just really was, I mean, it actually brought tears to my eyes, because it was a very simple and straightforward account of all the things that they had done and all the ways in which the people had been hospitable to them and had made what they wanted to do easy for them, had given them access to the art that they were doing, the poetry that they were writing, explained the language as far as they could, and so on. And time and again, I have, when it has come to specifics and to individuals talking about their experience of being in the Arab world or in the Muslim world, it has been an experience of hospitality.
I'm speaking to Adaf Souif, the author of two novels, both of them available in paper from Vintage, In the Eye of the Sun and The Map of Love. You're listening to Bookworm, and I'm Michael Silverblatt. You have lived in two cultures in which assumptions reign. Is your job, do you see your job as a novelist, the job of, as they say in Milton, explaining the ways of God to man, explaining the ways of the East to the West, and vice versa?
Yeah, it's that's, you see, that that is a very, very difficult one, and one that I'm actually sort of, in a sense, struggling with, because I sort of don't believe that that one should write novels or create a poem or, you know, for a purpose other than the internal purpose of the work itself. I mean, that's much easier to see in music, for example. But I think that all art needs to be like that. When you're working on a piece of fiction, it has its own requirements, it has its own rules, it cannot be bent to the purpose of explaining something or propagandizing for something, and so on. On the other hand, of course, I find myself in this situation of being, well, of being me, of being an, through and through an Egyptian and an Arab, but also very much affected and influenced by Western culture, particularly sort of the culture of the arts, and finding myself writing in English. So in a sense, I'm sort of really pretty well placed to act as go-between. I think that how sort of so far I've resolved this in my mind is by realizing, I suppose, that there is a point at which you choose the concept. There's a point at which you choose what the topic of your next novel will be. Once that happens, then the writing takes over, and really you're only writing in order to fulfill what the book requires. Now, I have found, particularly with the latest book, The Map of Love, it's found an enormous readership in the UK, in the United States. It's been translated into 13 languages, among them Arabic. And the response has been partly that people have said that they've learned a lot. I mean, I'm very glad and honored and delighted that people have actually sort of fallen in love with characters and wanted not to be separated from them, and asked sort of, is there going to be a sequel and so on. But also it has had this effect of saying, look, you know, you hear so much about this culture, you hear so much about the way things are in Egypt or in the Arab world. This is how it is. This is, come inside, you know. This book offers you the opportunity to come inside, come and meet these people, come and see how they think and so on. And to that extent, the answer to your question is yes, that it does present, if you like, a case for one of my cultures to the members of the other of my cultures.
One of the most interesting and moving things to me about The Map of Love, if you believe as I do that intrinsic to the nature of a culture is the way in which its language works, what one learns as you read The Map of Love is not Arabic, but things about the way Arabic works as a language and groups its concepts. And I wondered if you could describe that for us, because it seemed to be one of the profundities of the meetings of these cultures, and leads in a way to what Edward Said has called an Arabic novel in English.
Yeah, I think that this has been one of the interesting sort of byproducts for me of working in English, that because I write in English, but a lot of my characters are Arab, and a lot of the language that is spoken in the book is Arabic, it sort of made me focus on the language. And so there are, there are sort of asides and bits in The Map of Love where Arabic itself is explored. And one of them, incidentally, is one that the gentleman who gave me his poem last night picked up on, was the fact that in the book it gives you 9 Arabic words for love. And in fact, since the book was published, I found 2 more.
One of the things that Said points out is that by writing in English of Arabs, of England through the eye of the Arabic culture, that we're experiencing something that is the opposite of exile, that the other is being joined to the subject. And I wonder, does that mean anything to you as a writer in a conscious way?
I don't know about in a conscious way. I know that I love the English language, that I have, ever since I can remember, I've taken enormous pleasure in it and in its sort of, you know, sounds and what people have done with it. And I love working with it, and clearly I feel more able to work with it as a literary tool, as an aesthetic sort of entity than I am able to do with Arabic. And as a language, I find it extremely hospitable. I think that one of the really interesting things for me with The Map of Love was working in different Englishes. because you have the journals of Lady Anna Winterbourne, which are written in the year, you know, in 1900, 100 years ago, in a particular Victorian lady writing her journals fashion. And there's no hint at all of any other consciousness. This is just purely sort of late 19th century English. And then you have the English of the narrator, who is sort of Egyptian, but who is bilingual and who's narrating in English. So that's a sort of modern day standard. And then there's the English of the emails and the English of the American heroine, Isabel. But then there's the English that is used to translate the written Arabic of 1925. And so that kind of reflects that formality of the Egyptian lady in 1925 sitting down to write a formal narrative of her brother's life. And then you have the English that represents the Arabic speech of today, whether it's among the sort of educated classes in Cairo or it's among the peasants in Upper Egypt. And English can do it. It can allow you to form it and play with it so that it embodies these different consciousnesses. And one of the nice things that have been said to me by bilingual readers, Arabs who you know are bilingual, who speak English, they've said that in the conversations which the characters are speaking in Arabic, but you, the reader, are reading them in English, they, as Arabs, hear the Arabic. So they're reading the English, but they're actually hearing the Arabic in their heads, which is brilliant because it's exactly the obverse of the process of writing it, where I hear the dialogue in my head in Arabic and it comes out on the computer in English. So, and it happens backwards for the reader. And that, I mean, I think English is just a fantastic tool for its literature.
I've been talking with Araf Souif, the author of The Map of Love and also of In the Eye of the Sun, both of them available from Vintage. Thank you, Adaf, for joining me.
Michael, it's been a great pleasure. Thank you.
You can read the first chapter of The Map of Love on the Bookworm page at kcrw.com. My associate producer is Melinda Siegel. The technical director is Ray Guarna. Our Santa Fe technician at the Lannan Library is Chip Borton. Special production assistance from Alan Howard and Mario Diaz. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next week on Bookworm.
To the jungles you can go in books.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. Archived editions of this and other Bookworm programs can be found online at kcrw.com, keyword Bookworm. Cassette copies are available. For ordering information, call 310-450-5183.
They're your treasure, friends in prose and rhyme.
Now it's Book of the Mouse Club time.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air, new music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.